All right, guys, welcome to the Uncommon Cast. We have a really awesome guest today that we're really excited about. Actually, Pam found this guest and shared with us.
Yes.
Months ago.
Yes. And we've been enjoying being a part of her Instagram community for a few months now. And her name's Sharon McMahon. And we invited her on here because not because we wanted to talk about politics. We're very kind of like apolitical people, you know.
Usually avoid it.
Yeah. but we see so much hope in what she's doing on her Instagram account. And it's so much more than politics. It's so much more than news. And she's really like, she's even going as far as to like use her platform to bring good things to the world. We're so stoked.
Yeah. And I would just say, yes, Sharon's Instagram, Sharon Says So, she does talk about political issues. But the reason we had her is because what she does in that arena is to bring people from varying political beliefs, varying philosophical ideologies, and brings them to a common place to have a conversation about understanding. And if you know anything about Uncommon Good, that's our goal. That's what we seek to do in the faith sphere. And so we see so many overlaps between her ability to have people on all sides of a topic have meaningful conversation around it as something that we can learn from in our lives, in our conversations about faith, at the dinner table with our weird uncle that disagrees with everything we have to say. There's just so much goodness there. So we hope that you listen to this conversation with Sharon and learn some great things and get some hope.
We're so excited to welcome Sharon McMahon, not Sharon McMahon.
No.
Of Sharon Says So on Instagram.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Oh, yeah. We're so excited for you to be here. And honestly, like, you sound the same right now as you do on Instagram. Shocking. I don't know why that surprised me.
Weird. It's like I'm the same person.
Almost like that. Yeah.
In real life.
So we wanted to get started just to help our audience maybe meet you a little bit. Would you just give us a little bit of your story? How did you get where you are now? We know it's been a storied and adventurous journey.
You haven't always been Instagram fame. So bring us back to before that.
In a nutshell, I am a longtime government and law teacher. So that's what I did a lot of my adult life. I've been an entrepreneur, owned several businesses. And shortly before the 2020 election, I started noticing, you know, a lot of things online that just were not based in fact. And I just started making some little short explainer videos that were nonpartisan. They were not encouraging you to vote for one party or another. It was just like, hey, here's how the Electoral College actually works, things like that. So I just started doing little videos like, what do you guys want to hear about this week? And the rest, as they say, is history. It really just took off from there. Apparently, there's nobody on the internet who just talks about facts in relation to politics. It's always about how you should be voting, what you should be thinking, why you should be a liberal, why you should be a conservative, you know, what God wants you to do, what your conscience tells you to do. There are a lot of encouragement to align with a certain viewpoint and not a lot of encouragement to just be like, here's the details. And now you have some education and you can form an educated opinion. Yeah. It's hard to make up an empty mind. So that was just really how it started. I just wanted to make some little videos that like I could use in a classroom.
Why do you think that touched such a nerve?
You know, I think there's a lot of weariness surrounding politics, a lot of burnout, a lot of overwhelm, a lot of anxiety from both ends of the political spectrum. My husband, Chris, and I are both very interested in politics. He has a PhD in political science. So, you know, it's a very natural, easy topic for us to discuss. And we do it every day. And there have been times when we have looked at each other and been like, I am so tired of hearing about this. And we have said, like, if Sharon and Chris McMahon are worn out. You know, like people whose education and interest in this topic is like up here and most people's interest is down here. If we're worn out, I just can't even imagine how weary so many other millions of Americans are. And mm-hmm. so I think there was just, there's a weariness of being that inundation, constant inundation with like, what is happening today? Like what bombshells have exploded today? Yeah. And just having, it's almost like I liken it to just like a little raft in the ocean that you can kind of swim to and hold on to and catch your breath.
Exactly. That's,
you know, like that's kind of what I hope to be for people is like, you can swim over here and hang on for as long as you need, rest for a little while, and then you can go back to, you know, swimming or whatever it is you want to do next.
Mm-hmm. Or not.
Or not.
Yeah.
Or not. Or be so, like, I'm done. Thank you for your service. And I appreciate it. And goodbye.
So I found you right at election. I mean, right in that in-between week between November 3rd and 6th, I think. And mm-hmm. Truly, I mean, it sounds comical, but like, I don't watch the news anymore. It has completely helped that anxious ridden, even if you didn't mm-hmm. know that you were full of anxiety, like the tension that would build up where you were just, you know, log on to social media and see, you know, and not know, is this truth? Is this, you know, or mm-hmm. why is this person so angry? Or why are they saying this? And now I don't get out of bed in the morning until I go through all your slides, drink my coffee, calms my day.
Which is great because you're in Minnesota. So you've already, you're already at like 20 dashes by the time we wake up over here.
You get a full load and then ready to start my day.
Oh, that makes me happy to hear though, that it actually makes a difference for people. Mm-hmm. You know, that makes any, having meaningful work mm-hmm. is important to all humans. Mm-hmm. And so to know that it actually is meaningful to somebody, I'm not just talking about, you know, the weather or, you know, let's talk about earrings today. I love earrings, but that can't be your whole life's mission.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like to know that somebody has meaningful work and that it does make an impact is very, that helps me.
Yeah. Well, and similarly, but different than Pam, I would say because of the arena surrounding politics, I just wanted nothing to do with it. And so mm-hmm. I chose ignorance. You know, or just like bowing out, like, thanks, I'm good. And finding the lessons that you teach has really educated me to be able to like speak intelligently about mm-hmm. a topic, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. without the anxiety, which I think is just so valuable mm-hmm. right
Thank
now.
You. Oh I'm gosh. So glad. I'm so glad that helped you. Yes.
Yeah. And for me, like when Pam shared it, I was immediately like, this is what I'm needing, you know, because I've felt politically homeless for a long time mm-hmm. and looking at what certain corners of the internet and certain ways that the right and left are talking about things. I look at both sides and I'm like, yeah, that can't be right. Mm-hmm. No, that doesn't sound like it's true. That doesn't reflect the reality that I know. And so being able to like hear facts and just have this solid foundation is very grounding and calming for me. Mm-hmm. So
one of the reasons why I think so many of us, myself included, avoid the politics, avoid the stances, avoid sifting through channels for facts is because they are divisive, mm-hmm. right? That's what people are fighting over. You can be attacked for wearing a mask, right, at some point, or attacked for not wearing it. So you have a way of bringing peace to a divisive entity, right? Of let's talk about facts, but let's do it in a calming way. So how have you navigated that? How do you enter the place of facts, which are divisive in our kingdom, right? But try to bring people together over that.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's just an extension of what I've been doing my entire teaching career, which is giving students facts about how the government works. So to me, this is like, guys, this is what I have been doing forever. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, I don't view my work as revolutionary. I know teachers are doing it all day, every day. The difference is that I'm just doing it in a bigger space where more people are watching mm-hmm. than in just a classroom of 30 students, right? So teachers everywhere all the time are discussing difficult issues with their students and hopefully giving them fact-based information so that they can have that education to make up their own mind. So when you're talking about navigating it in a, you know, an online space where people can be anonymous and where people can be trolls, it is different than in a classroom where you have the opportunity to develop a one-on-one relationship with everybody in the room. So, you know, there, that comes with its own, it is a little fraught with peril. It is a little like, oh no. When I first started doing this, I really did feel like at any moment, the armies of Mordor are going to be knocking down my door, and I will be powerless to hold them back. You know, like that scene in Lord of the Rings, where you can see the armies coming, and you're like, "Well, we can try to bar the door." You know what I mean? And it doesn't last long. I really did think that was like, that is what is coming, and I don't know if I want to watch. And I've just been very pleasantly, like every day, I'm pleasantly surprised at the people who are attracted to the work that I do, the people who want to be in my community, are by and large not like that at all. That by and large, they very much want to make a difference in the world. They very much want to be the change. They want to peacefully coexist with their neighbors. They want things that are good for America. They are not those, you know, fly-by-night trolls that you think of on the internet. So I don't have any magic recipe. I don't have a like two parts this and four parts this. It is just what I've been doing for a long time. And then the people who are supposed to be in my community are in my community. And if you're not in my community, then maybe you want to yell at people. You can find a place to do that somewhere else.
Yeah. Not in my house.
So, you know, what is that famous saying that like at the dinner table, you never talk about faith or politics. And so there's a lot of similarities between what you do and what we do. You in the political realm, us in the faith realm, as far as helping clear up maybe misunderstandings around our area of existence. But what I see you doing it intentionally. I see you bringing people to a place where they can find understanding, where they can feel heard. So I'd love to hear you talk about that a little bit. Like what are you intentionally doing to bring people from very different places? And you, like your community, obviously it's big enough to be incredibly diverse. How do you bring them to a place of feeling like they're a part of one community? Like that's strategic.
Well, some of it is just, this is like true of classroom teachers as well. You lay the foundation and the groundwork for how the rest of the class is going to work for the rest of the year. Like we're not going to hit each other in here.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like actually, nope, we don't throw shoes.
Yeah.
So we're not doing that. So I purposely don't set up situations in which people have the opportunity to scream at each other.
Yeah.
I like people to say what they're thinking in their own words instead of me trying to translate for them. But I am always the kind of intermediary between those things so that it cannot be a heated back and forth. You've like one sentence, go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Say what you got to say. Literally. And then you can send it to me and I will, you know, repost those. But it cannot become a heated back and forth. And that is really the difference between yelling at somebody on a street corner and visiting an account where you are hopefully seeking to understand where somebody else is coming from. Yeah. Because my position is that understanding doesn't obligate you to agree. But understanding is an important component of making progress. Understanding and having somebody feel heard and understood is an important component in just about every relationship, frankly.
Yeah.
I mean, every human relationship that is a very deep-seated human desire. You can't logic your way out of it. It's just deep within our brains. And so if you cannot start with a place of like, okay, tell me why you are thinking this. I want to understand where you're coming from. Where did this idea that you have come from? Tell me what's going on here. I want to understand. Just saying those words to somebody, I really want to understand. That is a huge difference maker right there. Yeah. If you are listening to understand and not just listening to respond, tell somebody up front, I want to understand. That helps them feel safer. That calms down the heightened emotions. That lets them know that you really are interested in having an important conversation with them and that you're not just there to yell. And then some of it, of course, is tone. It's not always what you say, it's how you say it. Some of it is just tone of like, yeah, we can talk about that. Let's do that. Tell me your thoughts on that topic. I always take care to not belittle somebody's understanding who is less than mine. And I think that is also, there's a lot of people who are just like ridiculed, made fun of. And so they just feel like, I'm not even going to engage in this because I'm just going to look stupid. And so because you don't want to look stupid, you don't engage. So when somebody asks me a basic question about something, can you explain the difference between X and Y? My goal is always to just like explain it in a really straightforward manner in a way that does not humiliate somebody and in a way that makes people feel safe to ask questions.
And I see that so much in your responses, and people will say things like, sorry, dumb question, and you're like, nope, not a dumb question at all. I've asked questions before that I thought maybe were dumb, and you've always been gracious in answering them. And I also see what you're describing. You take people's questions. Let's say that we're talking about a hot button topic, and you'll say, okay, conservatives, what do you think of this? Moderates, what do you think of this? Liberals, what do you think of this? And then you're working as like sort of like this mediator, this facilitator of the conversation, and you start to find these common ground things. And it's so beautiful and exciting when I get to the slides where you're talking about, okay, here's what I see a lot of people saying. Here's where we can find some common ground. I'm like, screenshot that, because it's just, it gives hope that we can find common ground. So how is that awesome for you? Or because it's awesome for us.
It's awesome for us.
I enjoy, I love it. I love what I'm doing. I wake up every day excited to do it. I am never like, oh my gosh, I gotta talk about that some more. You know what I mean? Like, I'm always excited to do it. It's teaching is just kind of like an endless well for me. But I love seeing people when they realize like, I did not know that. Okay. All right. I did not know that. That makes a difference. Okay. I get it. Thank you. When people see that, like, their assumptions about what a liberal might believe or their assumptions about what a conservative might believe, those assumptions are often quite wrong. We are operating on assumptions that are not real. And we've just been informed by somebody somewhere that all liberals think this,
right?
All conservatives are X. We've just been informed that. And so because we like the person that told us that thing, we've just taken that as truth. And when people realize that, like, we actually all want quality healthcare for American people, that is like, to some people, it's like mind blowing. Like, I didn't realize that almost all Americans want that. I didn't realize that almost all Americans just want like a fair criminal justice system that operates without bias, like on both sides, overwhelmingly both sides. We want that. We've come to understand that somehow only one side wants fairness and the other side just wants to imprison everyone.
And that's whatever side is not our side.
Exactly.
Right. The side that's not our side is evil.
Right.
You know, like we really have come to a place of viewing our own position you know, the man on the white horse, mm-hmm. and the other side as the evil that must be combated. Mm-hmm.
The orc army.
Yeah, that's right. Wow. 100%.
Give people a link to Lord of the Rings so that they can get all this.
And I find, you know, that's something that we talk about a lot at Uncommon Good, because we find, right, in... we are in a situation that has been decades in the making, where we mostly spend time and talk with people that are mostly like us. And so what happens is we hear our own biases validated. We hear our own viewpoints echoed back at us. And then we are able to generate caricatures about anybody that is not like us, because I actually don't know anybody that isn't like mm-hmm. that, mm-hmm. right? That isn't like me. I don't know anybody that fits mm-hmm. in XYZ category. Yeah. And so it's really easy to make broad sweeping assumptions about huge groups of people if I actually don't know an individual in that group.
Yeah. And caricature is a great word for it. We create caricatures in our own mind mm-hmm. of what a group is like.
Yeah. And so mm-hmm. What we seek to do, and I see you also trying to do, is in Instagram, it's faceless, but for us, it is putting a face to a person that believes differently about you, and then teaching you how to have a conversation. And we actually find that it's somewhat of a lost art. Like, come and sit at a table and talk with people about something that maybe you believe differently about. But then watching relationships develop between people who were very different philosophically on all sorts of things is why we keep doing what we're doing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I love that. I do. I agree with you that we have moved to a position of if you do not meet the following criteria, if the criteria that I have decided of must believe X, must believe Y, must believe Z, must believe A. If you don't meet that criteria, then I'm sorry, we can't interact.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right.
And then that, I can't even listen to you.
We can't interact at all. No. I will hear nothing of what you have to say. I will block you. You know, social media has a lot of wonderful qualities, but it also has negatives. And so blocking is sometimes necessary for your own mental health, but it's also now become a thing of like, you don't meet the criteria, you're right. blocked. Mm-hmm. Well, and so we purposely avoid having conversations with people who are different than us. Mm-hmm. We avoid it. And because in an online space, it often is not healthy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Versus being taught those skills like you guys are talking about, it's harder to hate someone up close, hard to hate someone looking them in the eyes, being taught those skills and then having an actual living human breathing human being in front of you. That's a different experience than just like firing off a couple of messages online.
Yeah. Well, and like, so passively, we don't even often have to, avoid conversations with people that see us differently, because we're all byproducts of the social dilemma. I'm sure we've all seen that, watch that, right? And you go, really, am I only getting my own creation of reality?
Yeah.
Right? Yep. We're byproducts. You're in this world of not only the social dilemma, but kind of the truth dilemma, right? Where we only find truths that we're looking for. So I know some of the greatest questions for you and everyone that the community that you've created is kind of, where now are you getting your truth? And how can we break out of maybe truth that we're guided to just out of our own likes and dislikes and engagement on social media to true truth, right? Yeah. And especially in the political world, historical world, or anything like that. Where's true truth?
Yeah. Well, it's a little bit like, it's obviously different than in a faith space,
right?
Because what resonates as true for somebody in a faith space is different than things that are here in the physical world, mm-hmm. right? Things here in the physical world have a physical manifestation that we can look at, we can examine, we can discuss it, we can test it. So things in the physical world, you know, you can't examine those things with the same lens as one would do with discussing topics of faith,
sure.
right? Mm-hmm. Those are two often sometimes two different things. So one, I have a few little guidelines of like, here's how to avoid getting sucked down the rat hole of internet misinformation. Number one, most graphs are not true. somebody's tweet is probably also not true. Just the idea that we have really moved. This is almost everybody. We've really moved to a system of getting most of our news, most of our information from social media.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then of course we only follow the people we like. Mm-hmm. And then we're only getting our news from people we like. And exactly like you were just saying, we continue to perpetuate this echo chamber of, of information bouncing back at us that validates our own already held beliefs.
Yeah.
So moving off of social media as a place to gather information is a good start, mm-hmm. because again, you want to have access to people who have actually done the work, done the research, looked up the data, determined the source of the data, mm-hmm. That kind of moving off of social media is an important first step. Mm-hmm. The second thing is not accepting one person's word as gospel. Mm-hmm. Other people need to be able to validate and replicate this information, just like we do with medicine. Best practices and new discoveries happen all the time, but the gold standard is still your peers need to be able to replicate the data. More people need to be able to look at this and be like, that is okay. Yep. That happened. So then I always try my best to see if I can find primary sources that discuss that, and primary sources being something like a videotape or the person who actually conducted the study where they're discussing like, here's how we obtained the statistics for X thing. Mm-hmm. So I'm validating with that primary source and not just accepting one person's word as true, because all humans are fallible. All humans are subject to confirmation bias. All humans, this is just like how the brain is wired. There's no one human, myself included, that you should just be like, everything that comes out of their mouth is 100% factual. Yeah. And I believe every word of it.
Right. Well, which is a problem.
Yeah,
because I don't have the time, right? Which is why we have abdicated our decision making to people that we trust,
right.
Even though we don't know those people. And that has then devolved into like soundbite philosophy, soundbite headlines. Politics, soundbite theology, right? Because I don't have the time to be an expert at everything. And it makes me like my skin itchy to think that I have to like track down all of these sources to find truth. So what do we do about that?
Yeah. Well, let's say you are having a health crisis and you have a scary diagnosis. Do you then become a heart surgeon so that you can perform your own operation?
No.
That's ridiculous. You need an expert for that.
Right.
No single human can be an expert on everything.
Right.
That's not reasonable, nor is it even something that you want to do. So finding a team of people that can guide you on that, difficult health crisis, and putting your faith in them to a certain extent. Obviously, you have to use your own judgment, your own mind to say like, this seems right to me. I'm going to go with that. You have to make up your own mind about it. But there's no expectation that you become a heart surgeon prior to, having some kind of surgery. You don't need to be an expert in that. So I do think there is value in finding experts that you trust, but not putting all of your faith in one person. And especially if something is like commentary based, it's yesterday there was the big COVID relief bill that was passed, right? $1.9 trillion, et cetera. Those are things that if you can click on the news and like everyone's repeating the same fact about like it was passed, it was $1.9 trillion. Chances are very good that all those reporters have done their due diligence and like that is something you can actually rely upon.
Right.
Where things get tricky though is differentiating between fact and opinion.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Right. And so often the cable news industry operates on opinions. It doesn't actually operate on sharing facts with you. It operates on telling you what to think about something.
Yes.
So, but yet we still believe that it's a news program. And so we believe that what they're telling us is fact, because we associate that it has the word news in the name of the, in the name of the network.
Yeah. Right. It must be true.
So it's news. You know what I mean? So that is, you know, that's another topic entirely, but in terms of, do I need to be an expert in everything? No. You don't need to be an expert in government. That's not a thing that's required of you. I would encourage you to go to a website that aggregates news stories. If this interests you, go to a website like All Sides, or go to a website like apnews.com and read some stories that interest you when you feel ready and interested in doing that. A site like All Sides allows you to see how various news outlets have covered the same topic. Yeah. So it will show you, again, going back to that COVID relief bill, it will show you how right-leaning media is covering this topic, how more center-focused media is covering this topic, how left-leaning media is covering this topic. And then you are not putting yourself in the position of being in that echo chamber 24/7 of only hearing things that are what you want to hear. But again, take it off social media to the extent that you're able to. Don't just follow people who tell you what you want to hear, and be critical with what people post. If people are like, the California school districts are making everybody convert to this other religion, and soon children will have to sacrifice humans in all California public schools.
Probably.
You know what I mean? Like, could I write that on Twitter? Yeah, I could. I have the First Amendment right to do that. Does it mean to have to be backed up with facts? No.
But
you know
what I
mean? So like somebody's tweet is not your, cannot be your news source.
But I watched a YouTube video.
Do your research.
You know, YouTube news.
Do your research.
Sure. And what I love the differentiation there is like you're telling us to do actual research with primary sources that are reliable and verifiable, as opposed to doing your own research, going down rabbit holes of conspiracy theories
of people who live in their mom's basement and just, you know, like their websites are full of incoherent ramblings, and but yet we like what we hear, so we're just gonna go with that.
Okay. This is perhaps a rabbit trail, but how on earth did like QAnon become a thing that needed to be reckoned with?
Isn't that fascinating?
Yes.
I just read an article this morning about how it has overtaken the world.
Yeah.
And how it is not just a thing that like 12 people in America believe.
Yeah.
It is a thing that has inundated dozens and dozens of countries now. Mm-hmm. And it is very fascinating. And you know, I have my own theories about how something like this happens. And I, you know, I can't substantiate those theories. So I'm not going to just like spout them off as for you to, you know, take as truth. But some of it does have to do with the viral nature of information on the internet.
Yeah.
How easy it is to spread information. Yeah. That game of telephone that happens when you heard something like, well, my neighbor's sister works at the CIA.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And then you like get drop some truth bombs and then you're like, whoa, my neighbor's sister works the CIA. And then you like start spreading that information. You don't even realize that you're spreading misinformation. You don't have bad intentions. You're legitimately worried. Yeah. So you talk about it to your neighbor and it just becomes this, spirals out of control.
Right.
So the difference between real conspiracies and conspiracy theories, of course, real conspiracies actually happen. There's that.
Right. Which is part of the problem, right? Because then we can go, well, it does happen. Yeah. So
it's only a conspiracy until it's proven true.
Until it's proven. Well, real conspiracies, first of all, are very difficult to keep secret. They're very difficult to keep secret because you have all of these competing actors who are operating in their own self-interest, like all humans do. Right. Mm-hmm. And so they are butting heads against each other. And so real conspiracies to be successful require a small number of people to participate. Humans don't get along that well, just by nature. Yeah. We just don't. That's why we have moms to break up our sibling fights. That's why, you know what I mean? Life. Like my own children are at each other constantly. They just don't get along that well by nature. So the idea that, you know, 40,000 humans or 100,000 humans, which would be necessary to pull off massive conspiracy theories, that they're all getting along well enough that nobody is ever like, I'm going to tell on you guys.
Right. Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Like, just think back to like the sibling fights you had growing up, like that holding over. Didn't you guys do that? Like, clean my room or I'm telling.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, didn't you do that? Like, you better give me all your candy or I'm telling mom that you did that. You know what I mean? Like, that is human nature. Yeah. That is our default of like, do what I say or I'm telling. So the idea that nobody ever tells, there's never one conflict among humans. It's mathematically impossible that nobody ever tells, that nothing is ever, no evidence ever comes of it. I mean, I could talk about this all day, but if you think of an actual conspiracy like Watergate, how long did it take before Watergate was uncovered?
Right.
Not that long. Mm-hmm. How many people were involved? A couple dozen. And that was a big conspiracy.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that was a big scandal. Mm-hmm. And guess who uncovers the vast majority of real conspiracies? The media. Yeah. The media uncovers the vast majority of real conspiracies. And the media has been very maligned, you know, like can't trust anything they say, blah, 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 so biased, et cetera, et cetera. Most conspiracies are uncovered by the media. They're not that, like, they actually serve a very important function in American society.
Well, I could see contributing to the problem, though, because then when we go back to talking about really biased commentary-based news media, a lot of them purport that there's conspiracies happening all over the place, right? Mm-hmm. And so then when you say, well, most conspiracies are uncovered by the media, well, that's a perpetual problem or a self-feeding argument, you know? Like,
But the media needs to provide evidence. That's the thing.
Right.
They have to, the media needs to show up with the goods. Otherwise they're just like, show me the money here.
Right.
Where is your evidence? Otherwise you're just talking. I don't have time for this. Mm-hmm. I have stuff totally. To do.
Yeah.
I have stuff to do.
So I want to make a big jump here. Right. So, so obviously, and talking about media and everything, I think any spectator wants to go, okay, why are they giving me this truth? Why are they giving me, what is their agenda? What is their bias? So Sharon says, so what is your agenda behind bringing facts to polarized places in our world? Because there's a thing behind the thing for you. There's the heart of what drives you every morning to do this. What is your agenda?
That's a great question. I love that question. I can't say that I have one agenda where it's like every single thing must run through this lens, but there are a few of them. One of them is one that I already mentioned, that you can't make up an empty mind. And too often, I feel like a lot of the problems we have in America are people making up empty minds and clinging desperately to the position that they have staked without any real understanding of why they believe that. And until you can say, here is why I believe this, here is my evidence for believing this, this is what feels true to me and right to me, and here is why, until you can say that, you don't have a full picture of, you know, the issue. So that's part of it. Some of it is that I want to help, at least, like, let's start moving this ball down the field here, you guys. You know, like, I don't even like sports, but that analogy makes sense in my mind. You know what I mean?
Some ball, like, on some field, we're just trying to move it.
I don't care what ball it is. We're just on some surface. Let's start moving this to go from point A to point B. we can't just stand here in this pit of mud and yell at each other. Like somebody needs to pick this ball up and start moving with it. Mm-hmm. And right now we are in such a quagmire of partisanship mm-hmm. that we are not even, we're making no progress on anything that will truly make a difference mm-hmm. to the vast majority of Americans, because we're more interested in winning than we are in what people need, mm-hmm. what in the
absolutely
things that will help them. We're more interested in being like, well, I did not compromise on the minimum wage, so I won.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Yeah. And in actuality, you won nothing. Yeah. You won zero. You don't even get a participation medal. What did you do? Nothing. So that's part of it for me too, of like this, like, I'm not saying I need to be the one to run with the ball. I'm just saying, like, I want to just, like, can I pass this to you? And can you start, like, going that direction with it or something? Yeah, yeah. You know, like, I don't need to be the person to cross the finish line, but I at least want to at least try to help mm-hmm. get us out of this mud pit of this. Just all we do is sling mud at each other and scream at each other and go nowhere and do nothing.
Yeah.
So I see one, you're behind the heart of education is a desire for unity and progress. Absolutely. But here's another like reveal of your heart is you and your community, because of your leadership, jumped on meeting true needs mm-hmm. of medical expenses and things like that. Can you tell us a little bit about that? Because that is a reflection of Sharon's heart to actually do something with this community that we have.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's so kind. So to make a long story short, back in December, I was getting ready to hit 50,000 followers and just was like, you know, it would be fun if we gave away some money via Venmo. And I just, in my mind, thought people could send me like 50 cents via Venmo or something like that. And I would get like $1,000 and I'd leave like a really cool tip at somebody's restaurant. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that's what I thought would happen. In my mind, I was like, whoa, what if I got $5,000? What would I do with $5,000? Like that seemed like an incredible amount of money to be able to just give away. And within a couple of weeks, people had sent me $125,000 just via Venmo for absolutely no reason. I mean, there was a reason, but strangers to me. And so I spent a good chunk of the month of December giving this money away to people mm-hmm. who needed it. And then I had $15,000 left. And I had said, one of the things I wanted to do was I wanted to work with an organization that forgives medical debt. And it's called RIP Medical Debt. And they buy large quantities of medical debt from hospital systems, medical systems. And then instead of trying to collect on the medical debt, they forgive it. And so because they buy such large quantities at a time, like hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars at a time, they get huge discounts on it. So their ability, you know, to like take a dollar and forgive $100 of medical debt, because they work in these huge spaces, I just thought that was so incredible. Like if we donated $15,000, that could forgive $1.5 million of medical debt. And I was like, that is an incredible ROI, mm-hmm. Like that's incredible. Like $1.5 million is going to make a lot of difference for a lot of people. So I just opened it up to people and said, okay, listen, I've sent in the 15 grand that I had left. What if we just got to 20 grand, you guys? Like we could say as a community that we forgave $2 million of medical debt. That would be mm-hmm. amazing. And within 5 days, people had donated $566,000, which will forgive over $56 million in medical debt. And that absolutely blows my mind. That it is like kind of miraculous, frankly, that all I did was like, what if we did this?
It was a spectacle to behold.
Yeah,
it really was.
I was refreshing continuously, like looking at my phone. Oh my gosh, it's up to this. And you toppled Stephen Colbert's record, right?
Wow. Get all you nighttime TV hosts.
It was awesome.
Well, what does that teach us, though, about diverse people's desire to come around a meaningful mm-hmm. what's the word that I'm looking for? Cause.
Meaningful cause. Yeah.
Right? Like that, I think, speaks volumes about the story that we tell ourselves, that we are so divided and that there is no common ground. To see something like that happen in a community that is diverse, where obviously everybody was able to rally around a central cause. Like that right there gives hope, right?
Right.
Yeah. And it says that all of those people who contributed, the average donation was probably $10. You know, like aside from the $15,000 that I, you know, that came from donations that I put in, most people were not, I'm not aware of any large gifts. I'm really not, you know, like nobody said, hey, like somebody donated 20 grand. I'm not aware of any of that. Most of their donations were probably $5, $10, maybe $20. $50 is probably on the high end of the donations. So that's a large number of people contributing $5, $10 each. Right.
Right.
So that to me says that people from all walks of life actually do care about their fellow man, their fellow human. They actually don't want to cause excessive suffering. They see others in distress and seek to relieve that distress.
Yes. Right.
Like that is a, but that's meaningful to people from all walks of life.
Right.
So I think it is hope giving in that we cannot characterize one group of people as being people worth listening to. And this other group over here is just full of, you know, Nazis. You know what I mean? That people from a variety of backgrounds all looked at the situation and were like, that these people need help. Let's do something about it.
And I think the other thing that that teaches us is that we are the raw materials of miracles. You know, it is the average, it's the person that brings, feels like they have very little to bring to the table. But when we all come to the table, suddenly miraculous things are able to happen. It's not some outside source that donated all of this huge chunk of money. It was just a whole lot of really normal people that were like, yeah, I'll show up.
Yep. Absolutely. I'm willing to be part of the change. I can't be the whole change. I can't fix the whole thing, but I can give you $10. And I, you know, I got so many messages from people who were like, I really appreciate the opportunity to feel like my small contribution makes a difference for people.
Right.
Yes.
A lot of times if you give $5 to a massive international organization, which many of which do fantastic work, but you don't feel like that $5 is really like, what is this going to do?
Right.
You know what I mean? Whereas if in a situation like this, we know with that little progress needle, you can see your $5 go, you know, like every little teeny bit helps. And I love the idea that this is one of the things that the internet is amazing for.
Right.
It's crowdsourcing things that are making a difference in the world. I love being able to help other people feel that feeling. The philanthropy and giving money away is something that I've always said, like, if I could do one thing, I would love to be rich enough to just be like Oprah or Ellen and just give copious amounts of money away. Like I love it so much. And to just give people that little teeny hope to cling to, I think in some small way can help them maybe change their outlook. Like I don't need to do everything, but I can do something.
Can you talk about Texas, and not Texas seceding, because you've talked about that too, but with the hardships that people were facing in Texas with the winter storms,
like Google spreadsheet.
I feel like what you're talking about played out really well without you doing much. Like the community kind of just
did it themselves,
ran with it, said, you just said, here's a spreadsheet.
Fill it in.
If you have a need, fill it in. If you have some money to give to that need, go find that person's Venmo and Venmo them some money. And to me, that was, it was fun to be a part of, and like send money to somebody and then them send back and like tell the story of why it's so meaningful, you know? And so you've facilitated this community that is actually kind of just running with things on their own. So can you talk about that a little bit? I kind of just gave the whole thing away, but yeah.
It's just such a great, and I want to say that at the last tally, something like $50,000 had been given away just like from person to person, like with no pass through. I didn't collect any of it. It was literally just like, I see your need and I have 10 bucks. And instead of getting Starbucks, I'm going to help you.
Yeah.
And the feeling that that creates in somebody, mm-hmm. that feel that, you know, like that pleasure of giving, you know, if you have kids or you give somebody a great Christmas gift, the joy that it gives you to watch them open that gift. Mm-hmm. I love that so much. Just like seeing somebody else enjoy something that you've given them. So when people experience that, I think that makes a difference for them when they realize that like my small imperfect action has made a difference for somebody. I don't have to be perfect at it. I don't have to have all the money. I don't have to have an MBA. I don't have to, you know, I don't have to have a law degree. I don't have to have anything fancy. I just need a little app on my phone and I can imperfectly be a small part of the change. And if the more people we can help create that feeling for, that mindset for, the again, going back to my sports analogy, the farther we can start moving that ball down the field.
Yeah. You are an amazing bridge builder. And we've talked about that and how appreciated it is. And one, you know, quick thing I just wanted to say about your listening to understand, and one of the things I see happen, and it feels a little bit more strategic than I ever realized, but there'll be a hot button topic. Liberals, how do you feel about this? Conservatives, how do you feel about this? Lots of commentary, and then a beautiful whale singing a song. And then I'm like, oh, you know, it's so magical. And yeah, it's just, I think that's very helpful in the, wow, we all are humans on this planet and we do want good things. So it's really great.
Thank you. And most people are nature lovers, right? Yeah. Most people love animals and we keep animals in our houses and whatever. Like most people like at least something about nature. And you know, there's a lot of scientific studies that talk about the impact nature has on the human psyche. Yeah. And there is just something about it that is like, it's a pressure release.
Yeah.
It really is. It's a pressure release. It
brings back down to earth, right?
It does. And who knows why I like whales? I don't know. I mean, they're cool.
Yeah.
I have loved them since I was a child. But one of the things that watching, you know, live streams of eagle cams and like mama whales swimming with their babies always brings up for me is that nature is unconcerned.
Yeah, totally.
All of our dealings and wheelings and webs of lies and, you know, all the things that humans concoct.
Right.
Yeah. All these problems that we have literally invented for ourselves. Yeah.
Right.
We made these problems in many cases on purpose. You know what I mean? We made all these problems and nature is unconcerned. Not that they're not ever impacted by humans. That's not what I'm saying. But like the mother bald eagle sitting on her eggs, she does not give a flying fig about who the president is. Right. She does not care about the minimum wage. No. She does, you know, like she does not care about any of the human invented problems that we have made for ourselves. She is just doing her job, what she is, you know, programmed to do. And that to me is always very centering.
Absolutely.
To be like, you know what? This argument is not the be all and end all in this world.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so it reminds me of something that you said, something that we've actually talked about too. And this is kind of where we would want to close it out and let you go because we know you got to go soon.
Yep.
but you've talked about how like we've been in worse places before. Mm-hmm. We've been in, you know, harder times as humanity, and Earth has been around for a while, and all these kind of things that tell us that we're going to be okay. So can you talk about that a little bit more, and like, how can we have hope knowing that the future is actually going to be okay?
Yeah. Well, I think understanding the past helps us have a clearer picture of where we are now. And when you look at what humans have endured, much of it is far worse than what we are going through right now. I see the amount of anxiety and depression and mental health challenges that people are having today, which are very, very real. No doubt about that. And I think there's a lot of despair, people feeling like this is the worst it has ever been. Right. And in reality, if you learn about history, you see that this actually is much, much, much better than it has been in the past. Now you have the ability, like if you're sick, now you have the at least a hope of getting better. Now, if your child has a fever in the middle of the night, there's something you can do about it. Now, if you are arrested for something, you have a hope of getting a fair trial. Now we don't literally have 20 million people dying of the plague in Europe, where if you were sick, they would cast you out of the house. And the well people would remain inside the house to be protected from you. And so people who had the plague, which was a horrible death, literally just died on the street because they could not be safely in their homes. And the idea that it could just wipe out your whole family in a couple of days. You know, right now, obviously, we have a pandemic going on, but it is now you have hope of receiving medical care. You have hope of recovery. You have hope of being cared for if you are sick, and not just being like, sorry, you do need to sleep on the street now. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, that's not what happens. I could talk all day about how things used to be much worse than they are now. And humanity has endured.
Yeah.
And humans are resilient creatures. And our present circumstances, to some of us, very, very real heartache is happening right now. And this is not to diminish what somebody is struggling with. Mm-hmm. For many people, this is the hardest thing they have lived through. But our present circumstances are not permanent. Our present circumstances are not permanent realities. And things will change. Things will get better. It is one of the, you know, it's always happened. It's never not happened that things have improved and changed over time. And I have faith in humanity's ability to live through difficult times and to come out the other side and say our comeback is going to be greater than our setback. Like, that was hard. And here's what we're going to do to make sure that doesn't happen again. Humans are high, good at that, it turns out.
I think that grounding reality that there is hope, that flicker of hope is just what keeps people moving forward. So thank you for having that community be a beacon of hope for so many. Thank you for creating a space where differing opinions can come together over a greater good. And thank you for being here with us today.
Yeah, and Sharon, we've all heard the Blanchardism that leadership is influence. Thank you for being so much more than just an influencer, but you have actually moved people to do good in this world and actually really change lives of so many of those people that had medical expenses that were crushing their souls.
That's right.
Thank you for being you. That is the heart behind the Sharon Says So.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Oh,
yeah. Thank you so much.
Pleasure. Yay. An honor.
Thank you so much for being with us in today's Uncommon Cast with Sharon McMahon. That was amazing. That was so great.
So good.
We're blessed to see such a leader in this world doing good. And may this episode bless you as well.
And remember, you are loved.
You are valued.
And you belong.